Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The Men's Room podcast from TalkSport is proudly sponsored by Toolstation. If, like me, you love a little deal, then you can join the Toolstation Club today online, in-store or via the app, and you will save some money getting a 5% discount shopping with Toolstation, as well as a chance to get your hands on some fantastic prizes, such as TVs, gaming consoles, and even holidays. If you keep spending, you'll keep on saving. That's the Toolstation Club, so make sure you join today, online, in-store or via the app. A Bosch.
Hello everyone, I'm Adi Oladipo. Welcome back to the Men's Room podcast, joined as always by my good friend Rory Jennings. Today we're talking crime and gang culture, a very, very sensitive topic, and we're joined by none other than Gideon Barbang. Did I say that correct?
Yeah, Barbang.
I'm going to give Gideon his proper title, founder of Our Pain to Power, chairman of the Violent Crime Prevention Youth Board, award-winning motivational speaker, and representative of the Prince's Trust Advisory Board as well. So you do a lot.
Yes.
You do a lot, and I think it's needed when it comes to crime and gang culture. Talk to me. Go back a few years.
Yeah.
Obviously, you are what you are now, and it's a very positive role model, positive in terms of what you do.
Yeah.
Was it always that?
No, I feel like inside it probably was.
Mm.
But, you know, when you're raised in an environment with low mental health, with high poverty, high anxiety, underserved community, those traits that you have that my mum and my dad instilled in me starts to kind of go. And then you have to pick up other traits to survive in that environment.
What area are you from in London?
So, South London, Croydon. Mm. So, a little area in between Croydon and Mitcham.
What was growing up for you like? And when I say that, I mean like gangs and crime. What was that like for yourself?
So, for me, I didn't see it as gangs. Mm. You saw it as your friends. These are friends that you've known for a long time. You know their parents. Is like a community.
Yeah.
And I made friends that obviously had issues at home. So some, you know, had parents that were in jail, siblings that were selling drugs. And I think what happened was when I became their friends, I started to see things and hear things which started to impact me as well. So now if you're standing, if you're with your friends riding a bicycle and he has a brother who has an issue with someone else and you're with them, you're now part of the situation.
You've now got that issue.
You now have that issue.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what happened with me, because I didn't need to join a gang. I didn't, and you know, it didn't, I didn't know it was a gang, but I didn't need to join anything like that, because most people sometimes join for finances, but I was fine. My parents took great care of me. But for me, I think it was just a sense of belonging. I'm an only child, so I took my friends, you know, I took them as my family. Mm. And my friends, I'm talking about the gang.
Mm. When did it go into, because so far hearing it described, it sounds, yeah, it sounds pretty relatable.
Yeah.
Whereas I think most people who grew up, particularly in central London, in flats across London, will certainly empathise with what you said so far.
Yeah.
Growing up with your mates, if your mate's friend has a problem or your mate's brother has a problem, that problem becomes yours. I think this is all very relatable.
Exactly.
But I think that it's going to become a little bit, like, so far I'm on board.
Yes.
But I know that our experiences change massively. When, yes, did it go from relatable, mm-hmm, growing up, having your friends in the estate, your friends, yep, in the area, to becoming more actual gang rather than friends?
Right. So for me, It's when a few reasons is complex, because again, I had my friends that would have issues, but then I didn't see no role models that I can look up to. Now, the only ones I saw were the ones that were driving the big cars and the chains, and they were the drug dealers and the gangsters. So I'm looking at these people thinking, yeah, I want to be like them. So then you start to do...
So it's the elders and it's the elders in the area, and that becomes aspirational.
Yes.
They've got the money, they've got the girls, they've got the car, they've got whatever else.
Yes.
And that becomes the aspiration.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly that. So I saw that, plus having issues here and there with, you know, you find out that your area has issues with another area, and again, automatically you're involved. Your friends are involved.
That to me is when it becomes... Up until this point... I think your London story and my London story is similar. Mm-hmm. Now it's about to turn, I think, because I never, you know, how this seemed, maybe I'm a bit old for this, but you know what seemed to materialise postcode wars?
Yes.
That kind of thing. That never entered my life at all when I was young. I was from Northwest London, Kilburn. That never, postcode wars, that kind of thing wasn't on my radar at all.
It's funny that you say that, because for me growing up, and it's funny, I've got friends like Rory that it completely missed them. Like, I say this stuff to them and we live 5 minutes away from each other. I'm like, yeah, but it's hard how it doesn't affect you. For me, that was just a standard. For me, obviously, I'm in Stratford.
Right.
So my problem growing up was always with Hackney.
Yes.
And it mattered. It mattered.
Big time.
Right. Yeah, so if you're from Kentish Town or Camden Town or Kilt, it didn't matter to me. Like,
if I'm in Hackney, I'm on alert. Growing up, between the ages of 16 to 30. If I'm in Hackney, I'm thinking at any time there could be a problem.
And is that relatable to you? When you hear that, is that the way that you see it as well?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. It, you know, every time I stepped out my house, hoodie on.
Yeah.
It wasn't to look cool, it was for protection and fear, because I don't know who's going to see me. I've had issues. Sorry, when I've seen my enemies outside my house, walk past outside my house, and then they've come to knock on my door asking my mum for me, wanting to attack me. So, yeah, I can definitely relate to that. It wasn't a joke.
Do you, was there a time for you growing up, so you meeting your friends, and like Rory said, initially it's fun, right?
Yeah.
And we're not even thinking you're in a gang, just with your friends. You're with your friends and you're going out or whatever.
Yeah.
There is a time, though, where it does cross and you know... this has got to a stage where it's become naughty.
Yes.
Is there not a... Like, you grew up with mum and dad around.
Yes.
Is there not a time where you think, I'm not a bad boy, though. Deep down inside, I know wrong from right.
Yeah.
Let's stop this.
Yes.
Why didn't you stop?
Right. So there'll be times when my friends wanted to, like, rob shops and rob people, and I never did that. I just couldn't. My heart just never let me, ever. So...
What age are you here? What age are we talking?
So let's say we're talking from... We're talking from 13 to about 16, 17.
Okay, yeah.
And do you know what I find like interesting is trying to understand the motivation.
Yeah.
You touched on it earlier, but it sounds like you had like a supportive family.
I did, mum and yeah.
So was it financial gain? Like, do you know when people get into these situations?
Yeah.
Like, if you were to say like gang culture, why is it for monetary gain? Is that the point?
It's so complex because everyone has their own reasons for being caught up in it. Some people, again, finances, wanting to be a part of something.
Yeah, feeling a belonging part.
Like, you know, low self-esteem. I feel like we all had low self-esteem and we had to join to make ourselves feel better. And just the clout, you know, I used to walk down the road in Mitcham and Croydon. Oh, hi, Gideon. That makes you feel like you're a top man.
Yeah, status.
You know what I mean? Status. Exactly that.
And look, me and Gideon, obviously, I guess we share something similar because we're both from African backgrounds. So I already know that his mum and dad would have been super strict.
Yes.
And my mum and dad at the time when my dad was around, super strict. So it was almost a case of when you stepped outside the house, it was almost like, let's go.
Exactly.
Because in the house, you couldn't do anything. Like, no chance. Like, you know, the belt would come out immediately.
So your family would have been livid to know that you were having your moments. And Addy, you've had your moments. Your family would have also been livid.
Yeah, I think if my mum, like if... It's funny. But if my mum was to have been told that what her son was doing outside, she would never believe it. Because inside, I am the perfect. My dad was a pastor. My mum was part of the church brigade. So it was almost impossible. So I always used to laugh with my friends that none of our parents would ever believe what we're doing outside. But like Gideon said, for me growing up, the guys to look up to, there wasn't the role models now that you see with young black boys growing up. Now they're seeing artists and actors and musicians. Everyone's doing good. It was the guy on the road selling food or doing fraud at the BMW, the big gold chain. And you're like, I need some of that.
Yeah.
How do I get that? And so you're just following him. And I used to follow my older brother as well. And then eventually you're in a gang, but it's not even a gang. You don't even feel like you're in a gang, but you're in a gang. I think for where it turned with me is that when my best friend died, got killed.
Right.
And then in this gang, as part of Jesus, right.
Yeah, a very good friend of mine, Olu, passed away when I was 25. So then it's like, okay, this is now become very, very serious. Like, this isn't a case of just making money. People are dying.
Yeah.
And people are going to jail. And as much as I've considered myself a so-called bad boy, but I was smarter than going to jail. So I was like, okay, I'm not doing that. You guys have gone that, I'm not doing that. And that's where I was able to kind of go that way, where other friends, and I don't know if Gideon said, other friends went vroom, and they're either dead or in jail because of that. I was able to kind of...
Did you have that epiphany? Did you have that moment? You know how Addy found himself at a crossroads, like a hurtful, pained crossroads, but still, did you have a moment?
I did. I was 16, and the head of my school called my mum in and said, your son is, you know, up to stuff. And she knew, because every year I got included and I got like banned from schools, and she had to pick me up for like a whole year because I wasn't allowed outside of the gates after school, whatever. So she knew what was happening.
You weren't
what was that? What? Yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
You weren't allowed within the vicinity
so
of
after school, I had to be picked up.
Because they knew it was trouble outside after school.
Yeah, because they're like, Gideon starts trouble with his friends. So
that can be enforced. I didn't even know that could be enforced. There could be a thing from the school where they say you must
have.
They
picked me up for 6 months. It was, it was so embarrassing.
Mm.
But every day she was parked right in the middle so everyone can see. Picked me up for 6 months.
And what then happened? What was the moment that...
So she broke down in tears when we had the meeting with the head teacher, and when he told her, you know, your son's a gangster, like he's doing this and that, and he's in school with his hoodie up, his trousers low, and she just broke it down, and I just thought, but again, I feel like I was at that age when things were just becoming too much on the roads as well. I think I had to fight a few months, like we got caught with a BB thing as well, gun. So things, there was a knife at a fight scene, so things were at its peak, and I thought, after seeing her cry, I thought, no, I have to try and make a change. And obviously it was the right time as well, because I'm choosing my next options, college or work, sixth form, and I chose to go to sixth form because, you know, I knew that it was the smart boys there and I wouldn't have no issues, even though I still kind of did, but it was the right choice. And all my friends were there, they went somewhere else, college and that stuff, and the friends that did, one of them still in jail for murder. One of them shot themselves with a shotty, I think, a shotgun. One of them was in jail. Robberies, this and that. So I knew that I just knew, deep down in my heart, if I had went that way, it would have got worse. Because again, we're 16, I'm going to be 17, it's just going to get... So I knew that, nah, Gideon, just try and divert. So that was the point where I started to divert. And, you know, I started to be around more of the right people. In a sense.
Did it cause issues? So effectively, did you have to leave people behind?
So I still lived in the same area, but yes, I did. And I had a friend, like a best friend, who, like, he was so cool with me, but then he was the worst as well. He was the reason for about 80% of my issues. Right. Because he was just a snake, basically. And I don't know why, but no, I understand why now, because he had a lot of issues at home and stuff like that. But he was like, I felt like one time he'll love me and the next time he'll hate me. And I was dealing with that for like 4 or 5 years of school. And I was happy to just move away from him as well. Yeah. Even though he lived down my road and I still saw him after. But I left some people behind, definitely. But again, I was in a new space without, you know, because the school I went to was just like a lot of guys part of that life.
But there wasn't any pushback from the fellas that you left behind. They weren't kind of begrudging of you trying to move on or trying to keep you in.
No, there wasn't.
That's interesting you said it, because for me it was difficult because I felt like I'd gone so deep into it. It was almost like I couldn't send everyone a text message to say I'm no longer in it.
Yeah.
It was, you know what I mean? It's like, how do I tell people, okay, I'm now working. I remember I got my job at Islington Council and I was like, I'm working.
Yeah.
I'm no longer a part of this. So I still had trouble for the next 2-3 years after. Still putting out fires here and there, still with friends as well.
So I still had trouble.
Yeah.
I still had issues when that, but I know that deep down, I didn't really tell anyone I've went there because I'm trying to move away, but I knew deep down. So I still had issues for the first, about a year after. I had issues in sixth form, outside of sixth form. Yeah, because you can't just change like that, right? So, but I knew that I was making steps, even if it was baby steps, I was making steps away from that. And that's what...
You know, with this postcode war.
Yeah.
Because it's now... become, you know, everyone likes to say, oh, in my day it wasn't that bad, but it probably was.
Yeah.
But we had no social media because now it flares over.
I genuinely don't think it was, though.
It was frightening, I thought.
I don't think it was.
Because I thought
that
people were, oh, yeah, 100% it was.
But the epidemic of children dying on the street wasn't like that when we were kids.
I feel like the children were killed then, but you just didn't know about it as much.
You think so?
No.
Your children. It's bad now. I think everyone's gone crazy now.
Yeah.
Even the music culture is gone crazy now.
The young bucks about now aren't like they were when, look, in my opinion, they're not, man. When there's, the young kids now are mad.
They're mad. They're completely mad.
Do you think it's comparable to when we were young?
I don't know. Sometimes I think of how I only can think of myself in clubs and the people that are getting guns and knives into clubs.
That's clubs, though. But now we're seeing it on our streets, broad daylight, on buses, acid attacks. We're seeing it everywhere, every day.
That was a terrifying era. Do you remember when that became
the acid attacks?
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
Because it looks like water, so you just don't even know, do you? People could just roll down your window.
That's crazy.
Why do you think, and this is probably even something in history, but this postcode war thing, I remember, because I had friends in Hackney, so I'm thinking, well, I don't hate everyone in Hackney, because my friends are, a lot of my friends in Hackney. Why has it gone so crazy now? Like before, it was an area to an area, so it was Brixton Lewisham, for example, Brixton Peckham.
Yes.
Now it's postcodes within Peckham.
Yes.
And I don't understand.
And what happens is issues. People start issues. So for whatever reason, something's happened with one individual, of probably something little, but then someone has just taken it far, and then they have to take it far, then tit for tat. Literally, that's how it all starts. It's always over something little. All it took was just, you know what? I'm sorry, bro. Let's sort this out. All right, then, cool. But it just never... too much ego and pride, because now there's not even, now it's actually Brixton versus Brixton, Croydon versus Croydon. There's no postcodes really, normal, just whoever. There's like five sets in Brixton that all have issues with each other.
Do you think, and I guess I can ask this, I guess as a black person, but obviously look, whites will fight whites, and you know, you go up to north and Asians are fighting Asians, but there seems to be, I think anyway, a bigger epidemic with black on black crime. Do you believe that, or do you think it's just highlighted more by the police and other organisations?
What do I call it, black? Because I don't think.
Because me growing up, my fear was against my own.
Yeah,
I never had any drama.
That's
with,
because we're in our own environment. Do you know what I mean? So we're, it's just us there most of the time. We still had issues with the Asians and and some white young people as well when I was younger. So I don't think if he's your enemy, then he's your enemy. It doesn't really matter what he looks like. I feel like you'll find probably like Manchester or Liverpool or, you know, different areas. It might be more whites on whites or more blacks on blacks, or, you know, it's just, I think it just depends on the environment and the community.
At what age would you say, how old are you now, Gideon?
28. Yeah.
You went to college 16, and it started to kind of obviously go away in terms of you being involved with crime. When would you say you officially closed the door on it?
Probably after sixth form, so 3 years after. I did 3 years in sixth form, so.
What made you then, because you've not just closed the door in terms of, okay, no more gang crime. You've completely gone the opposite way.
Yes.
By almost trying to, you know, you're an author, you do speeches on it. why go that far? Why completely just say, okay.
Oh, so before I did that, sorry. So when I was 18, I started to mentor my younger friends naturally. Because again, now I'm just like, yeah, this street life is not for no one and no one wins in it. So I just started to speak to my young people and just mentor them as a big brother. So I kept on that. And then when I went to your university, again, I'm not involved in no gangs or anything like that. I passed my first year of flying colours. In my second year of university, that's when I get attacked.
What happened?
So my family friend, again, had an issue. His friend had an issue with someone else.
Yeah.
And then he was like, oh yeah, my mate's got an issue. Are you able to meet me? And he didn't really know what it was about. And I went in there blindly. But after I found out that there was issues throughout the whole day, and I basically got the last end of the stick. So what's happened is we went to meet them, and then it was an ambush. And then we started to run. And the way I ran, they caught me by chance, and then they stabbed me.
You got stabbed?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereabouts?
Yeah, 14 times.
14?
Yeah. Yeah. All of them, yeah. Three stab wounds were 5 inches deep, and one was literally an inch. The one, yeah, inch away from killing me. So then after that, that's when, but again, I wasn't involved in nothing. It was literally by chance, but I remember just being in the ambulance thinking.
Some people would want retaliation.
Yeah.
Some people, that their first thing is, wait till I get back on my feet.
And
retaliate, yeah.
Mm-hmm,
how have you been able to, like, no, we're not going to do that? Why?
Right, so how do you say that? So I think the next day I had phone calls upon phone calls. People from my area, Croydon, my family members from all over, like, what are we doing, Gideon? What are we doing? You know, people saying we've got the machines, we've got, like, what are we doing? And remember, I've left this life up. Some people are still in it, right? And
machines is a gun, by the way, when he says machine. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm lying down on my bed. Number one, I haven't even recovered yet. I've just been stabbed, like, 12 hours ago. Let me relax. But secondly, I just knew that, no, because I knew that I'm still here. I'm still scared because I know some people, they'll probably die sometimes after being stabbed, a few days after or a week after. So I'm still kind of wary. But I thought, no, because I'm tired of it. Like, I'm tired of the tit for tat. I'm tired of who wins. So I thought, no, we're going to leave it. Are you sure, Gideon? Yeah, because no one wins. We'll be hurt. Our family's going to be hurt. Is it worth it? Is it worth, like, and then again, it will start a new war.
Mm-hmm.
A new war in Leicester. Who knows what? Who knows how much people end up hurt or you know, dead over me not saying, you know what, guys, leave it. So that's what I did. I said, we're leaving it. You sure? Yeah, we're leaving it.
That's huge, incredible. Like to do that. I'll be honest. When my friend Olu died,
yeah,
and I had nothing to do with anything else. But my friend Olu died. I think 6 people died on both sides.
Wow.
Yeah. So 6 people.
Now death is different, though. I know death hits different. I don't know what people would have done if I'd actually passed away, God forbid. But I know death is some. You know, when you're raised in a environment with trauma, and you know someone dies, and you're full of hate.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah. And I think for me, that was my scariest like time of my life.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like frightened. I'm not joking. Like genuinely frightened.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, I can't even live where I live now because people might know where I live.
Yeah.
I started going around and staying at people's houses until my big brother got involved. And he was like, okay, enough. This all has to stop type thing. You have to either go to Nigeria or something has to happen. And that's when I go, okay, I'm going to try and get a job. But yeah, a lot of people died. So for you to be stabbed that many times and for you to have that strength and say, no, enough's enough, because it will be tit for tat forever. I think,
you decide. Far, yeah. It's a far braver reaction. 100%.
Well. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Men's Room podcast on TalkSport is proudly sponsored by Toolstation. This is your little reminder that you can join the Toolstation Club today online, in-store, or via the app. You might be thinking, why would I sign up? But I'm glad you asked. At Toolstation, if you keep spending, you keep on saving. Signing up means that not only will you get a lovely 5% discount shopping with Toolstation, but there are thousands of prizes to be won. So that's the Toolstation Club, so make sure you join today online, in-store, or via the app.
What are you seeing now? You know, when you're out, you do some work with the Prince's Trust.
Yeah.
Are you seeing an understanding that this isn't the way to go? Are you seeing that people are, you know, this message that people are trying to take out there? I feel like people have really been trying to make young people realise that knives are not the way, gang culture is not the way.
Is it working?
Do you think the message is getting through?
Is it working, ultimately? Because a lot of people are doing it. I've got a close friend, Tony Bellew, who's like, you know, sort of gloves up in terms of boxing, knives down, things like that. Community centres are reopening because there's not anyone in community centres.
Remember when we were kids, there was a knife, do you remember, did you get this? They just put a knife bank in the flats and it meant that you could go and throw it away and no trouble. So these initiatives have been going, but are they working? Do you feel like it's changing?
I feel like it's probably some baby impact steps. Is being done, I think, but overall no. And I think because it just takes resources, it takes mentors in schools, and it takes funding, you know, it takes funding, but no one really cares until someone dies that's close to someone that has some sort of authority or the powers that be.
Until the blood kind of trickles down onto their doorstep, then I guess no one cares. If it's sort of within, if you like, the hood, if it's confined within the hood and it doesn't get outside of the hood, then I guess it's just what's in the hood, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think once it goes on to the steps of the rich and the you know, the well-educated, then maybe.
And now, I think in Leeds, a 12-year-old girl, she got stabbed like 5 times as well.
12-year-old girl,
in either Leeds or Reading, I'm not sure, and this was last year, and it's scary now. It's all over. It's not just London or young black boys, it's everyone now, you know. It's affecting everyone, it's impacting everyone now.
It's been big in Birmingham for years. Like Birmingham,
exactly.
Manchester had it, didn't they? They were calling it Gunchester and all that. Remember they had that serious gang issue?
Nottingham was called Shottingham. All these places,
and it's been happening, but it's only now that they're like, oh gosh, let's do something. And it's a bit too late, but you know, I feel like we all have a part to play in this, you know, schools, the community, government, the police.
See, like you say those things, and the one thing that you didn't say, I feel like is the biggest thing, parents. Like, you know,
parents,
we say schools and police, you're right, and the government.
Parents as well. Sorry, I missed
My mum put the fear of God in me. Do you know what I mean? Laid the law down. And look, and I thank God she did, because I easily could have gone the other way. But it was my mum, really, that fear of her and the fear of even police knocking on the door or getting that letter from school. She's the one that made me. And I feel like we don't blame the parents enough. Maybe it's kids having kids. I don't know.
I was going to say a lot of that. So when I'm working with my mentees and stuff, it's single mums, single fathers, you know, broken homes. Yeah. And can we really blame the parents for that?
That thing stems back to like government, maybe.
That as well. And, you know, just choices, I guess, people making choices and bringing young people, but you know, that's a whole different story. But with the parents, find it hard to blame, because I don't know what happens in their home. You know, we all have a duty, obviously, to care for
young
people.
Do you think the culture popularizes gangs? like, you know, films, music.
Music.
I know, definitely. Like, there was a lot of talk about, and look, I like the director, I actually know him personally from Blue Story.
Okay, yeah.
But I know that was banned from cinemas for a while because everyone thought that popularized the gang culture. Yeah, whether or not that's true, I don't know. But music,
I think definitely it does because it influences it, right? Mm. When I was a teen, I was listening to the rap and that, Gigs and that, and it was influencing me. It was making me want to go on road and do something.
Yeah.
Now, I know they say, obviously, it's the lived experiences, which is fine. Mm. And obviously, they didn't put, you know, we were all raised in a certain environment. And that's
they're only talking
happened.
About what they know.
Talking about what
but
they know.
It still influences.
It still influences. And I always say that, okay, cool. But you're still not doing anything else than that, trying to support the young people. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
It's education, isn't it? Education will alert people and make them capable of separating the art from the reality.
Yeah.
Like Eminem would always talk about that.
Mm.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm not responsible for people shooting up their school. Yeah, I'm not responsible. Yeah. I talk about it. I sing about it. I make light of it. I maybe don't approach the situation in the way that you would like me to, but I'm not accountable here.
I think. But should he though?
Should he be accountable? Should people like that who have the poor, like, yeah, literally, they could, Eminem could tell people to jump and they'll all jump.
Yeah.
Should people, like, if you go, and Eminem's obviously old school, but new school with the Santan Daves and the Stormzy's and should they go to schools and colleges and unis? I know Stormzy does a lot.
He does.
With
Stormzy
getting people
does
into education.
Yeah, Stormzy
he does a lot.
He does a lot.
Yeah. Do they need to do more? Work.
They do, definitely. All of them. I don't want to say any names, but all of them. All the drill rappers that are speaking about, you know, drugs and guns and knives, show us something that you're trying to do for the young people that's going to help them.
So do you think, you know, when you rhetorically asked me the question, should they do that? Do you think that this style of music and this approach to music is damaging?
It is, as much. I listen to it sometimes, but I'm you know, I'm not a kid anymore, so I can understand.
You're not influenced
it.
Anymore.
I'm not influenced anymore.
If you're
anymore.
Easily influenced, I guess.
Then it's gonna. Like movies like Scarface, Paid in Fools. When I watch that, I think I want to sell some drugs, actually. It just makes you think like that. Even if it's a joke, you have to think like that. Now,
paid
what
in
if...
Paid in Fools.
Exactly.
Did,
yeah. And then, let's say...
What about Top? Have you seen Top Boy?
I've seen that as well. That, again, not me, but I'm sure when you're, you know, watching it, you're thinking, oh, gosh, maybe I can start to sell drugs. And then your mate says, oh, you know what? I've got an order here. He wants to drop me a weed to go and sell. You're like, okay, look, let's see how it goes. And then it goes well, keeps going well, and then now you're in it. Mm. So, you know, just that thought can start the effect.
Yeah. Talk to me about your organisation, Pain to Power.
Yes. So I started that. I launched that last year on April the 30th, which was when I was attacked 14 times. And again, we try to do work right on the level, right on the ground level, with early intervention. So I believe we need to be in schools from the age of like 7, making them aware of knife crime and street crime and all of that stuff. So we do workshops around that. We do talks as well. And leadership skills as well, because they need to understand that they're leaders. They don't have to be followers.
Mm.
So again, we start low, workshops, mentorship as well. I believe in that highly. I believe in mentorship highly, because just that one-to-one, that's someone that you can speak to. If I had a mentor, I would though. If I had someone that I can speak to when I was in my, fights and gang wars and stuff, he probably would have helped me, but I didn't have no one. People that I did have to speak to, my mentors, were the ones that were in it as well. So they were advising me to do the wrong things. But when you have someone that you can relate to and speak to, there's nothing like that. So
they've got to be relatable, isn't it?
Like, they've got to be relatable. They've got
to
understand.
When I was in Focus E15, like a homeless hostel,
we
had people come in suits. And it just looked at it, I don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's not going to work for me. Yeah. If I had someone that looked like you coming in, relatable, that could tell me about, this is what it's going to be like. You stabbed 14 times.
Yeah.
That then I'm stopping.
Yeah.
I'm scared. As much as we all want to be so-called bad boys, you don't want to die.
You don't want to die.
You don't want to die. You don't want to get stabbed.
No.
So it's got to be relatable. So I think someone like you going in and telling your story.
Yeah.
That has to resonate with people.
Yeah. And it does. It makes them think twice. Of course, it's not just the talk they need. They need the mentorship after, because again, it's once you're in it, it's so hard to leave. So yeah, we just I just make sure that I'm in there and I'm speaking, and they know that, you know, I'm authentic as well. I'm not like blagging it or just saying like, this is real life, these things happen, I've lost friends, people are dying, you see on the news every day. Don't be that person. You don't have to be that person as well. There's so much to do now. You can make my money at the age of 14 on TikTok or whatever, you know what I mean? So let's put something, yeah, let's put a plan in place for you. And, you know, let's set some aims and let's go.
Do you still talk to people from your younger days?
Yeah, I still live there. So, yeah, yep, still live there, you know. Still walked outside my house last year. Saw some boys on a ped with, like, samurai swords trying to chase someone down.
Yeah.
So, still.
Was it not Hyde Park? That big attack in Hyde Park,
yeah,
where people brought out samurai swords and someone brought out some, I don't know what it was, huge one, broad daylight chasing people around in, I think it was Hyde Park.
Yeah,
I think that brought attention to it because everyone goes to Hyde Park.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like a park like Victoria, it was Hyde Park. Yeah, it was exactly. A big one. Mentally, how did getting stabbed 14 times affect you? Physically, you look obviously fantastic now, you're okay, but mentally, how did it affect you?
Yeah, so I had PTSD and I still, you know, I'm still wary of my surroundings, still panic a bit here and there. But yeah, the effects, I feel like it probably kicked in like a year after, I think. And yeah, just trust issues. Obviously, I wasn't able to sleep, always wary of who's around me. I wasn't able to like watch movies with like blood in it and all of that stuff. I had like nightmares for the whole year of like dogs chasing me in a graveyard and stuff. So yeah. Tried to have some therapy and counselling, but they were like booked up. The only way I was able to see someone was when I told them I was suicidal, even though I wasn't, but I knew that if I said that. But even then, when I went on the call, they said, "Nah, you're fine." So I did, I think they give you like, how do you feel from 1 to 10 or whatever.
Yeah,
did a few questions.
Speaking therapy.
Yeah, and they said, "Oh no, you're fine, you're right. Just, I don't know, like read a book or something like that." Yeah, okay.
How did your parents take it?
Yeah, devastated. They were just happy that I survived. But yeah, they were scared, obviously, but grateful to God that, you know, I survived. Yeah.
Rory, when you hear these stories, obviously, look, Rory grew up in an area, you know, and then he moved out of there. So you've grown up in an area where you've seen things. Mm. But when you hear stories like this, does it shock you? Do you feel like, my God, this is actually on my doorstep?
No, I mean, it's shocking. Mm. It's certainly shocking, but it's not surprising.
Mm.
It's shocking because it should be a shocking story every time you hear something as callous and hurtful as this. But it's not a surprising story.
Mm.
This is life in the city. And I think that begrudging acceptance that I've just displayed there is almost
bad, isn't it?
It's almost the worst thing that you could, like, it should be totally unacceptable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think it's kind of seen as being part and parcel of living in the city. There is a violent tinge to our city. There is an undercurrent in the city. There is a gang culture in the city. And I think we've kind of all accepted that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is probably the worst testament that you could give to London living, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
We kind of just accept it.
Which is scary, you're right. Yeah. Which is actually, yeah. You saying that now, I'm thinking we have, even me answering it, because I can't be like, yeah, we're doing, I'm seeing people are dying. So it's like, yeah, it's scary. It's scary. I can't.
I remember growing up in America was the place where it was violent.
Yeah.
Like you heard gang culture in America with the Bloods and Crips and other smaller gangs. And I remember reading, must have been a couple of years ago, that the knife crime in London had surpassed, or the killings in London had surpassed that in New York.
Yeah.
And that's when you thought, okay, there's a problem.
Yeah.
We knew there was a problem anyway. But when you think it's passing.
Yeah, because especially a violent New York had, when we were growing up, New York was like you couldn't go on the subway.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden London was comparable.
Yeah.
And even more.
And it's getting worse. Those numbers are going up and up and up and up. Just as we wrap, Gideon, you know, like if you were now, look at you now, 28-year-old, talking about all these things in a positive light. What would you advise yourself? Like, what would Gideon, this Gideon, tell 14-year-old Gideon who's starting to join gangs, whose mum has to pick him up from school? What are you telling him?
Well, do you listen, though? that's
a thing. So you know how difficult your job is then?
Yeah, exactly.
For you to say that, you know how difficult your job is.
Exactly.
Like, when you listen, you're smart, be like, oh, please.
Yeah. But there is a way. See, this is, I suppose this is the art of it. And I think that you're obviously going to be very good at this because you're an excellent communicator and you're driven and passionate about what you do. But this is the thing. How do you make somebody who is kind of belligerent, because there is a belligerent age, belligerent because of the way that they're approaching their life, how do you get into that person's psyche? How do you influence the uninfluenceable?
It's an everyday thing. That's what I'll say. Mentorship. If I'm able to see him like 3-4 times a week, because it works for me, but not just once a week or once every 2 weeks, for like a whole year, 2 years minimum. That's when we're going to start to see some change, because these young people are stuck in this environment that they can't leave. And every time they walk outside their house, they're seeing violence and crime. So I need to be matching the energy that the friends are matching. You know what I mean? Because he's on the phone to his friends and they're smoking weed and that. I need to be with him as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I need to be with him as well, supporting him. You know what? Head up to London. Let's just do something to engage and push forward.
That's what you said, I think, Ad, is important as well. I mean, you touched on the parental side of things. I think that's huge. But also the focus. Mm. You mentioned the Bellew Initiative.
Mm.
Tony Bellew saying, get in a boxing ring, play football, be good. What are you good at? What do you want to do?
Yeah.
What's the ambition? But it's opening the world, isn't it? You don't have to do this because you could be a wicked actor. Dan Kaluuya's in Hollywood, mate. Like,
yeah, these are people they need to look at. Especially if we're talking from a black standpoint, they need to look at Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Raheem Sterling at Neasden.
But then again, how many of
them make it through?
Yeah. No, but that has to be the ambition. Like, it can be done.
Yeah.
It can be done.
Chunks and them boys are all from the same estate.
Yes.
You know, just up there in Neasden.
Yeah, it's true.
But you're right, though. It's an everyday job. I've got like a couple of 16-year-old nephews.
Yeah.
And my sisters reach out to me to talk to them.
What is it going?
Yeah, they're at that age then when
they're
at a crossroads.
Yeah.
And it's every day.
And the thing is, for you, man, you're so like, in my head you're not, but you know, if you're them looking at you, it's like, who's this old geezer, man?
That's what they look at. You know what I mean? They look at me like, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And they're right, I don't know what's going on. Because I might meet me in Stratford. Yeah. Like, I'm not coming to Stratford.
Yeah.
I'm like, nothing's in Stratford.
Yeah.
I don't see it anymore.
Because
I don't see it. And I feel like I do see it because I'm in Stratford every day. Yeah. But they're like, I ain't coming to Stratford.
Yeah.
I'll pick you up from the station. No. You got to come pick us up from where they are. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So it's an everyday thing.
Yeah.
And people like yourself, Gideon, more power to you.
Yeah, good luck.
To tell your story, because it's a scary but also a magnificent story, the way you've come out of the other side.
Yeah.
And to keep on going. I think it's fantastic, and these are the kind of podcasts I like to do, because it's always good to hear someone that was a bit naughty who's now doing really good stuff as well.
And
just
matter.
Like Rory. Don't be fooled by his posh accent. He was a bit naughty and now he's doing good stuff
mate,
as well.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Gideon, how do people get in touch with you? Like, what's your social media?
So our Pain to Power, that's it for all of our social media: Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn.
Oh, you've got the T-shirt. I see you wearing the branding as well.
Yeah, yeah. Right now,
our
mate.
Our Pain to Power, our Pain to Power.
Well, you didn't bring a couple of T-shirts with you, now.
Do you know what? I only have one, you know.
What size is it? Because that would decide it. I'm a bit bigger than what size is it? But Gideon, really, thank you for coming down. Appreciate it. You heard it there. Pain to Power. If you want to get in touch with Gideon as well, please do.
Thank you
very much, Rory. I enjoyed that one. Thank you very much.
Huge.
As well. As always, thank you so much for listening to the Men's Room podcast. Again, like myself, I will keep repeating this. If you prefer to watch the podcast, which I like to do, go over to TalkSport's YouTube channel where you can watch all the latest Men's Room podcasts. From myself, Gideon, and Rory, to the next one.
ToolStation are the proud sponsors of the Men's Room podcast on TalkSport. Join the ToolStation Club today online, in-store or via the app, and you will save some money getting a 5% discount shopping with ToolStation, as well as a chance to get your hands on some fantastic prizes such as TVs,
gaming consoles, and even holidays. If all that isn't enough, then remember, if you sign up, then you'll get loads of exclusive discounts that aren't available anywhere else. That's the Toolstation Club, so make sure you join today, online, in-store, or via the app.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.